Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Tuesday, April 27th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my over 46 years of doing therapy. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that book is that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work, which is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using for over 16 years to great advantage, improving my quality of life and relationships, and turning any negative emotion I experience into part of that infallible guidance system that we've all been gifted with. And you can actually download the tool itself. It's a free PDF file to click and download, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. And you can also download and listen to a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have called in and either been stepped through the worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how the use of that process actively in their lives has improved their quality of their life. You can also go to your app store and download a completely free and private app. Just type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. Click on it, download that, and get access to the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we encourage people to do that soon and often because it usually prompts comments and questions. And if you have a comment or a question, that's why we're here 5 days a week in our current format, 2 hours a day. So you can give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1, and that'll put a little question by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. We've also been working through the Course in Miracles lessons this year. This is the 117th day of the year. Today's lesson is another review of two lessons, lesson 103 and 104. Lesson 103 reads, God, the Creator, being love, is also happiness. The commentary reminds me to let me remember love is happiness and nothing else brings joy. And so I choose to entertain no substitutes for love. Lesson 104 reads, I seek but what belongs to me in truth. Commentary, love is my heritage, and with it joy. These are the gifts the Creator gave to me. I would accept all that is mine in truth. So on the hour, I can recite God, the Creator, being love, is also happiness. And on the half hour, I can recite, I seek but what belongs to me in truth. And we've also working through the Pam Grout book, Course in Miracles Experiment. And her chapter 117 is titled, The Material World, It's a Temp Job. She quotes Debbie Handrick as saying, the ego and love are never on the same kickball team. For morning review, everything but love is make-believe. Love equals happiness and joy. So here's the summary. All apparent problems are temporary and ephemeral. Any situation that keeps me from feeling connected and ready to break out and dance, let's say the political situation or societal divisions, any of those things is a game of charades. It only seems rock solid because I keep staring at it, pointing at it, and pronouncing it to be true. It will only, quote, be true, close quotes, as long as I continue to stare and point. So, that's our Course in Miracles lesson and the Pam Grout summary. And we have 53 minutes, it's almost a record, the shortest intro in quite a while, to entertain a comment or a question, to have you suggest a topic for today, to step somebody through a worksheet process, to describe or clarify one of the many tools that Dr. Michael Rice and Jeannie make available at whyagain.org. And all you have to do to get a hold of us is either send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org or send Jeannie an email at jeannie@whyagain.org or give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. If you do that, I'll see a little question mark by your phone number and announce you by your area code. And we can have a conversation. We can have a conversation about the ancient Aramaic process of forgiveness. We can have a conversation about any lesson you want from the Tao Te Ching. We can have a conversation about, and there's a whole host of books that we have discussed on this show over the years. And if you want to tap into that list of books, you can go to mindshiftersacademy.org. And there's actually a page where I list books that we've discussed on this podcast. I haven't updated it in a while, but that list of books is like In an Unspoken Voice, How the Body Releases Trauma by Peter Levine, Welcoming the Unwelcome by Pema Chodron, Healing Depression Without Medication by Jody Skillicorn, D.O., When Things Fall Apart by Pema Chodron, Necessary Endings by Dr. Henry Cloud, Anatomy of an Epidemic by Robert Whitaker, a whole host of books on how to be anti-racist, The Way of Mastery, The Way of the Servant, The Gospel of Mary Magdala by Karen L. King. The list goes on. Jesus, My Autobiography, The Gentle Art of Blessing. From Anxiety to Love by Corinne Zupko. We've actually interviewed her on the show. Leadership and Self-Deception, a whole book geared towards CEOs and corporate leadership that contain many of the core tools, or at least observations without the tools, that Dr. Michael Rice has. That's by the Arbinger Institute. A Course in Miracles Made Easy, Butterflies Are Free to Fly by Stephen Davis. It Didn't Start With You, The Untethered Soul. Man, we've been at this a while. Look at all those books. Awareness by Anthony DeMello. That's one of my favorites. I read that once or twice a year most years. The Courage to be Free by Guy Finley. Taking Flight, A Book of Story Meditations by Anthony DeMello. Matt Kahn's book, Whatever Arises, love that. And Matt Kahn's book, Everything is Here to Help You. I apologize if that leads some on the call to break out in hives, but and Perception, Seeing is Not Believing by James and Steph Purpura. Yeah. And I didn't read anywhere near all of the books on that list. I just fanned through. So what would be of service to you? How can we support you today? What's a topic you'd like to have us explore? I was talking to somebody earlier today about the tendency to want to fix or change somebody when we can see that they're clearly in error. And there's a part of the book, The Tao Made Easy by Alan Cohen, that I was just listening to either yesterday or this morning, that talks about that and says, you know, how many times in your life when you were doing what you thought you wanted to do and somebody tried to tell you you're doing it wrong, how many times did that feel good to you? How many times did you just gladly flip around what you were doing and say, oh, thank you so much for pointing out my ignorance? Probably never. So when we decide we want to help someone, it's okay to offer some advice if they want it. However, the Tao, and this book by Alan Cohen about the Tao Made Easy, would strongly recommend that after we give a suggestion or some advice, that we actively work to detach our investment or identification with the outcome of the situation. If it's not ours to do, let it go and don't do it. In the Tao Made Easy, Alan Cohen quotes A Course in Miracles where it says, when you have learned how to decide with the Creator, all decisions become as easy and as right as breathing. There is no effort, and you will be led as gently as if you were being carried down a quiet path in summer. And this is all about, you know, this whole chapter is about learning to go with the flow, what Abraham Hicks would call the path of least resistance. And he tells a story about setting out on a plan for the day and having the weather come up and disrupt it and other logistics come up and disrupt it and just going with the flow. And believe it or not, things work out. They do not always work out the way we want them to. And most of the time, they work out far better. It says here, does the injunction to drop resistance mean that we're to lie down and let people do things that hurt us and others? Should we not resist war and child abuse and diseases? Are we to resign ourselves and the world to pain and suffering? Not at all. The key to eradicating injustice is the attitude you hold in your quest. When you battle with something, you empower the undesirable situation. Instead, hold foremost in your mind the result you would rather create. Fight or work for your valued goal instead of against the situation you do not prefer. When Mother Teresa was invited to speak at an anti-war rally, she declined. she explained, fighting against war is another form of war. If there were a pro-peace rally, I would attend. From the Tao, 69th couplet says, this is called marching without appearing to move, rolling up your sleeves without showing your arm, capturing the enemy without attacking, being armed without weapons. If something comes up that you wish would go away, accept that it has come up for a reason and consider how you can benefit from the experience. How is this situation stimulating you to grow in ways that you would not have grown had it not come forth? Is there an unseen opportunity here? Are you being guided to make a course correction that will ultimately improve your life? Every difficulty comes with a gift in its hands. Guy Finley says, the lessons we need ride into our lives on the back of events we don't want. And the importance of the lesson is directly proportional to the degree to which we do not want the event. I bet Guy Finley has read either this book and or the Tao a number of times. Every difficulty comes with a gift in its hands. It remains a problem until you accept the gift. Upon receiving the gift, the situation is transformed, and it may resolve easily or even miraculously. Do your best to hold challenges in a higher light, and do not lose sight of the many blessings in your own life. The challenge occupies but a sector of your experience. There is much more to your life than this situation. Balance your efforts to handle this situation with soul-nurturing activities and fulfilling moments with people you love. Life is more than a matter of perspective. Life is more a matter of perspective than facts. Align with the highest perspective, and the facts will take care of themselves, or you will be precisely guided how to handle them. From the Tao, Lesson 73, the Tao of Heaven does not strive, and yet it overcomes. It does not speak, and yet is answered. It does not ask, yet all its needs are met. It seems to have no aim, and yet its purpose is fulfilled. Lesson 73. I had occasion to hear a story by somebody who was dealing with a 42-year-old woman. She's got her own job. She's got her own house. She has her own car. And when the car broke down and just quit running, this 43-year-old person went into a panic. And she was completely focused on all of the facts and the evidence and not on the perspective. And what I know in my work with people when that happens to me is that it's not my 42-year-old self or my 60-plus-year-old self who's going into a panic. It's some younger version of me. This is why there is that bottom-line observation that says, anytime I have a negative emotion or a negative thought about myself or somebody else, I can instantly know three things. And the first one is that whatever this thought or emotion is based on is a lie or a falsehood. The second thing I can know is it's not about what's going on in the moment. This is an old tape playing in my head. There is literally nothing that could possibly happen in my life that would benefit from me going into a panic. The more important the situation is, the less likely it is that panic on my side is going to produce a better result. And I talk to people about this, and some people really struggle with this, but the essence of it is, in the Way of Mastery, it's in the Course in Miracles, it says, I'm never upset for the reason I think I am. And a way to translate that is, I'm never upset about what's going on in the moment. If I have an emotional upset, it's always because I'm thinking and thoughts are from the past. I'm not awake and aware in the moment and interacting directly. I'm spinning in thought, and that's what's creating the negative emotion or the negative thought. And the example I use, and I do get a lot of pushback on this, but I use the example of if there's a car accident, I'm standing on the corner and everything's fine, all of a sudden there's a car accident. And, you know, everything was fine, and moments later there's broken glass, bent metal, and bloody bodies right in front of me. If I have a strong emotional reaction to that, a fear, an anger, a confusion, an emotional hurt, that's stuff from the past. If I'm awake and aware in the moment and I'm a competent adult, the essential events, the data points in the moment, act directly on me and my action flows. And I spring into action. If I'm a logistics expert, I start calling out orders to people. If I'm, you know, a medical expert, I start using that expertise where needed. If I have a cell phone, I start making calls to coordinate, you know, 911 and police intervention. And if I'm, you know, young and healthy and strong, I may go over and pry a door open and help lift somebody out of a car that might, you know, eventually burst into flames. And it's an action that arises and flows from me being in direct awareness of life in the moment. And it does not involve thoughts that I pour mind energy into that then create emotions. And so if an accident like that happens and I'm shuddering in fear or I'm raging because I saw somebody run the stoplight and I want to go over and punch the driver, that's an old anger. That's an old fear. That's got no useful place in the moment. So I was trying to coach this person about how to interact with his friend who's 42 years old and going into a panic. And the more he talked about the logistics and the money and the potential for calling a tow truck and having the car fixed and all of these, the more he talked about that, the more she escalated. And my advice is, almost always these days in those situations, is that I stay as calm as possible and I hold a mirror up to the person who's emotionally agitated, and I refuse to talk to them about all the content and all of the logistics, and I begin where it must begin in order for those critical issues to get sorted out at a problem-solving level, and that is, I hold up the mirror and say, gee, you seem really upset. You seem to be in a bit of a panic. Let me support you in any way I can in calming down. And then we'll talk about what are the options for resolving the situation. But he talked about how the more he talked about it, the more upset she got, and the more then, you know, she was texting him after the fact and calling him after the fact, and there was no discussion between the two of them about how upset she was. So the more they try to work with the data points, the logistics, the finances, the options for getting a car to make it to work, the more upset and agitated the person gets emotionally. Because nothing about the logistics, the money, the car, the engine breaking down, whether it you call a tow truck or take it to a dealer that's, or you take it to a local mechanic, none of that is causing the panic in a 42-year-old adult who is clearly competent, has her own job, has her own house, has her own car. And if I want to help that person resolve something, I have to help them look at the level of cause. Where are these things being caused? And if I have a strong negative emotion or a negative thought about myself or somebody else, I can instantly know it's an old tape playing. It's based in a falsehood. And if I act from that energy, I'm just going to make the situation worse. I cannot improve my current life situation by adding negative emotional energy to it. It just, it's not possible. So the lessons I most need in life ride into my life on the back of events that I don't want. There's a talk in the book, The Tao Made Easy. It says, one of the Tao couplets says, allow your life to unfold naturally. Know that it, too, is a vessel of perfection. That's lesson 29. The next section is titled, Dismounting the Four Horsemen. The belief in the requirement of suffering and the expectation of catastrophe is established by the ego at the personal level and is projected onto the broader screen of the world. Just as we may be tempted to believe we are doomed as individuals, we may believe we are doomed as a world. Thus, we are inundated with endless prophecies of world disaster, disasters to happen, and disasters do happen, but well-being is far more pervasive. This is something, when I tell people, turn off the news, it's not the news, it's just the worst of the worst stuff from around the world brought into your home or your radio or your car. And if you focus on that, you drive yourself to distraction. Why? Because, yeah, bad things do happen, but there's far more good going on in every moment on this planet than there is negative. If all that was happening on this planet is the negative stuff you see on the news, we would have extinguished ourselves as a life form thousands of years ago. Disasters do happen, but well-being is far more pervasive. To escape from disaster, you must first escape from disaster consciousness. Extricate yourself from the dank bunker of anxious self-protection and step into the sunlight of creative vision. If there is something you can do to offset adversity, do it. But do not give your power away to fear. Align with the presence of grace, and surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, close quotes. We are told in the book of Revelation about the prophesied apocalypse, heralded by four symbolic horsemen, generally considered to be war, famine, death, and the Antichrist. Many people shudder to consider the coming of such a catastrophic epoch. What they do not realize is that the apocalypse has been around for a long time. It's nothing new. The history of humanity has been plagued by war, famine, death, and deluded egocentric antichrists. You don't need to worry about the apocalypse coming. It's been here. We've done that. We bought the T-shirt. Instead, put the apocalypse behind you and step into the post-apocalyptic age. Humanity has suffered enough, and so have you. More suffering will not buy us salvation. Pain hasn't freed us by now, and it will not do so anytime soon or ever. If pain could buy salvation, we would have all been liberated a long time ago. Lao Tzu gives us the secret to finally finish the apocalypse and live free of the terror it has wrought. He recorded his map out of hell 2,500 years ago, but humanity is a slow learner. Until now, we are reading these words. Until you are reading these words, it means that on some level you're ready. So humanity has been a slow learner up until now. If you are reading these words, it means that on some level you're ready to lighten up and walk the great way. You are free to hang out in the apocalypse if you choose, but to riff on a maxim, quote, 5,000 words to the wisest are sufficient, close quotes. The apocalypse means the lifting of the curtain. That curtain is the veil of illusion that makes it appear that we are separated from love. Such a condition is impossible, since the Tao is always present and it does not depend on our awareness of it to be so. Erroneous beliefs can create all kinds of experiences unlike the actuality, but they cannot replace actuality. When we wake up from the nightmare or the curtain is lifted, we see actuality as it is. Lao Tzu assures us that reality supports us. It is only in the murky corridors of the fearful mind that things seem to have gone awry. Painful events are not a punishment or our destiny. They're an alarm clock, waking us to return to the kindly universe we have turned our backs on and claim the well-being that we deserve. Tao in the world is like a river flowing to the sea. So we have 26 minutes left. How can we support you to understand how you might be living in the mindset of the apocalypse, learning to fear the apocalypse when, in truth, the apocalypse is already here? And it's possible for each and every one of us to awaken from that false experience we're creating, the negative emotions, the negative thought patterns, that we can instantly know are false, they're an old tape playing. And if we continue to act based on those energies or emotions or thoughts, the only possible outcome is to make our situation worse. So instead of engaging in the apocalypse mindset, understand that the apocalypse isn't coming. It's here. It's war, it's pestilence, it's famine, it's humans living from the dream of separation, which is a dream and not the actuality of life. It is people claiming that they have the answer to how to connect you to your source rather than assisting you to connect consciously with the source that is in you, that has given rise to you, that, as Guy Finley says, that source of wisdom and answers that will never abandon you if you just ask to be taught. There is an infinite, constant, abundant supply that is rooted in you and it will never abandon you. You don't have to go out on some journey looking for a teacher. Your connection to the wisdom of the ages is within you. And anyone who wants to tell you, you've got to follow these teachings, you've got to follow this guru, you've got to use this person as a mediary, an intermediary to connect you to the Creator or the true wisdom, is a trap. And it's the kind of thing that continues to feed the dream of separation, which many, if not all, of the true great spiritual teachings tell us is the only problem we have. The dream of being less than and separate from who, what created us. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. How can we support you today? I should probably mention that today's a Tuesday, and so as we've been doing for pushing 17 years now, Tuesday nights herald the arrival of a Tuesday night support group. And thanks to the consequences of our decisions in interacting with coronavirus restrictions, that support group is available online. And to get information about how to join us online, you can go to MindShiftersAcademy.org. And there's a separate page for the login information for Tuesday and a separate page for the Thursday group. Those participation is available absolutely free. Just go there, find the login information, get on your computer, type in the meetup, the meeting ID and code number, and you'll be able to join us. We are from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. Welcome, Susan.
Hello, Dr. Tim. Good intro, delicious stuff. Hearing all those little I Ching things was really good. I have a couple of questions. One is, you often talk about how people are struggling with the shutdown and social distancing and limitations and so forth, and we're coming out of that, but I just read an interesting article in the New York Times about almost a new category of mental health diagnosis, although they don't call it that. It's not depression, but it's called languishing, and you've probably heard about this. Even our minister, we have a supplied priest in our Episcopal Church, and we're all still on Zoom, very much shut down here in Pennsylvania. And he was admitting he's new to us. He's just a supply priest till our search committee finds a priest. But he said, you know, I have to say, I read that article. So the idea has been around, I guess. The article was today in the Times. But he said, I have been languishing. And they describe it as an inability to focus, to get things done, using distractions, to like too many Netflix series or word games. But, and then they make a few suggestions. One of the things that's kept Tim Bingham and me from languishing too much is the radio show and the ongoing work, which has been available right through the whole pandemic and long before, and I trust will continue. But I think I've had a tad of it too. Not sure, you know, it is, I would just like to see what you think of that and how you have dealt with the presentations by people in your Zoom groups about that.
Well, I don't think it's come up so much as that term, languishing, but there's certainly been lots and lots of disruption in people's lives. One of the things that comes to me to say is that there was a tremendous negative pushback when this first arrived. If anybody would say the new normal, and a certain percentage of people who would hear that phrase, the new normal, would generate livid anger. It's not normal. We're not going to do that. And they would just get very, very aggressive in their response to that. And so, you know, I think part of what gives rise to this languishing is thinking that this is just going to be a temporary thing. This will just be a few months. And so they're doing tools, behaviors, distractions that they're hoping are just going to be around for a few months. Like, I'm just going to watch a whole bunch of Netflix, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if it only lasts for a month or two, that's a nice little vacation. But if it's more than a month or two, now it's not such a good vacation anymore. It's a real trap. It's not very productive. It doesn't leave me feeling fulfilled. And now I'm, what this word is, you know, now I'm languishing. Now I'm stuck in a pattern of suffering where whatever I do that I think is going to relieve the suffering isn't addressing anything at a cause level, and it leaves me feeling hollow and empty and frustrated.
That's very interesting about the idea of people being so mad about the new normal thing, because if we look at what's happening in this, I was reading also in the Times how the birth rate has gone down, the pollution, certain kinds of pollution into the atmosphere have lessened because we're driving less. I don't know whether that's global and going to be continued, but
It was not just the driving less. It was also that factories had been slowed or closed, and so they weren't polluting as much. And there were pictures in the first few months of the shutdown of places all over the globe where, you know, the before and after pictures where you couldn't even see the city. And now you can see the city from miles away, or you can see the mountaintops. And so there's been a lot of changes, but it's not, you know, they didn't leave the factory shut down forever. And as soon as people were allowed to, they got right back to driving. And so now, you know, the bounce back is there. But this is more about the idea of what's happening with the individual who's choosing an adaptation pattern that isn't fulfilling. It's just kind of like putting myself in one of those cryo tubes and putting my life on hold until this pandemic is over. And I believe it's that kind of process that leads people to feel like they're languishing, because it's an extended period of doing something that they thought was going to be just a time killer, just a little vacation.
Yeah.
You know, that Alan Cohen, who wrote the book The Tao Made Easy, he talks about how his favorite vacation spot is, you know, like walking on the beach and reading novels or whatever. And he does that for a while, and then it drives him nuts. He can't just go live there and do that, because he has this other impulse to be creative, to interact with people, to hold his seminars where there's healing and there's groups of people talking through some of their deepest troubles. And so it's, the Tao is not just go with the flow and go off to some beach someplace and be a beach bum. And the Tao is do a little of that, do a little of this, back and forth, working and being productive, relaxing, recharging your batteries, getting back into the flow, being productive, being active. And what a lot of people have done in response to this, the coronavirus restrictions, is it's all over the map. Some people have just refused to follow any restrictions to begin with. They won't wear a mask and they won't restrict their activities. And other people have just completely shut down and they don't go out even with a mask on, and they have all their food delivered and they leave it in the garage for a week untouched so that any, you know, microbes or virus particles might fall away. And but those people who have made adjustments at a temporary level to just bide their time or kill time or numb out, that's what I believe is feeding the languishing.
Yeah.
Because they're not finding a way to pursue what, you know, Michael Rice would call their secondary purpose in new circumstances. Mm-hmm. So they're not fulfilled, they're not living into their purpose in life in any constructive way. They're just hoping to bide their time until they can get back to whatever it was that they called their life prior to this.
Mm-hmm. I have found with this pandemic time is that I've been given permission to slow down, although slowing down, I realize, is one of my, going fast is one of my pseudo solutions, and I was going to suggest that to Michael Rice to add his long list of pseudo solutions is to rush, because that gave me a sense of purpose, and it was a way of not facing things and yet feeling busy. I mean, Tim Bingham and I are like the tortoise and the hare, and when we go for a walk, I sometimes jog around him as he goes forward, because he walks, to my mind, astoundingly slowly. And so, you know, we've got kind of a joke, is I'll be running around him in little circles, but I've been practicing taking his pace, and it's only like doing this work that since last Friday and over the weekend that I've actually felt as if it's okay and possible to be slowed way down. But the pandemic time has also given permission, I bet, to lots of us to take life a little more easily and take a little pressure off. I hope that's true for other people.
Well, for some, that's an option, right?
Yeah,
for others,
it is
created such hardship in terms of finances and childcare you know, fear of foreclosure on the house and being evicted, and so it's just all over the map.
Yeah.
I liked the thing that came out early on in the pandemic where they said, hey, we're all in the same boat. And then somebody came out and said, not even close. We're all in the same storm.
True.
But some people are on a cruise liner, you know, fully stocked with food and people waiting on them hand and foot. And some people are on a piece of cardboard, you know, trying to stay afloat, treading water.
So
the individual circumstances
are
dramatically different.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been torturous for a lot of people from a financial perspective. It's been torturous for a lot of small business owners. They've had to close. It's been torturous for a lot of people who are identified as extroverts, because the lack of connection, direct, intimate connection with other people is a negative for them, whereas introverts, they're thriving. Or they're only mildly uncomfortable with the restrictions and disruption.
Right.
So it's all over the map. There aren't any pat answers for this.
I do hope that, and I bet it's true, that a lot of things like business trips will go on Zoom so that people won't need to fly and stay in hotels so much, because the business that they need to do can be done over Zoom with so much less difficulty. And I'm in my teaching, I hope to keep my students from Colorado, North Carolina, Maine, Cape Cod. I hope that we can continue to have Zoom even when we go back in person. So it's going to be very interesting. It's new, but it's not normal yet, I guess. But you're right. I have been very lucky. Kim and I have been very lucky because we've had it much, much easier than young adults who are working, young parents with small kids, teachers, hospital workers. So many people have really taken it on the chin. It's true.
Yeah, it has required dramatic and sometimes very high intensity adjustments in people's lives.
Right.
Time, intelligence, money, and energy often stretch to their limits.
Right. Well,
and
no
what
other
they're
hand
recommending. Go ahead. You got another comment or question?
Well, I have another question, but I was going to ask if anybody else's hand came up because it's really a change of subject.
Go ahead, change the subject. We have an agreement. If somebody else pops up a hand, I will let you know.
Okay, good. What is your take on what a healing crisis is? I know, I'm avoiding
telling
you.
I'll tell you what, it's a loaded question. That's what it is. It's a sticky wicket,
yeah,
as my grandmother would say.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
okay.
the phrase for various people means different things. And, you know, I first encountered it many years before I ever knew about Dr. Michael Rice when I was learning about homeopathic remedies.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that I had this or that problem, and, you know, with migraines or whatever, you should go and see this homeopathic doctor. But now understand that when you go see a really good homeopathic doctor, you're going to get much more sick in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever symptoms you're going to relieve, they're going to get worse before they get better. I said, what are you talking about? They said, well, yeah, it's called a healing crisis. And they'll give you these homeopathic remedies that, you know, basically are just energetic representations of substances. It's not the actual substance, and some people are going to say there's nothing to it and it's all quackery, but it's powerful stuff and blah, blah, blah. And so the
mm-hmm.
idea is the healing crisis is, in that work, it's the exacerbation of symptoms that you're trying to relieve.
Mm-hmm.
As you're detoxifying the system, the body, the energy system, that was giving rise to the symptoms. So in that sense, that's the definition of a healing crisis from the homeopathic medicine or remedy perspective. Now, the way Dr. Michael Rice is using it is a little bit more expansive. It is any of the negativity that you experience as you increase your vitality and do more of the right stuff, as he calls it. It has to do with diet and mindset and sleep and rest and drinking good water and flushing toxins out of your system and being willing to do the forgiveness process, which is to dismantle the energies that I'm holding on to or I've identified with, which are really at the source of my upset. And the more I increase my vitality and my body says, oh, good, Tim, you've got the vitality to get rid of this level of upset or that level of toxin, then as it's moving out of my system, I get to re-experience what it was like as it was being put into my system. And that could be the physical, the mental, or the emotional perspective. And Michael Rice has his way to talk about each of those, you know, so physically it's mm-hmm. any negative symptom I've ever had and fatigue, and mentally it's any negative thought I've ever had and depression, and emotionally it's any negative emotion I've ever had and confusion. So that's...
I lost the last part. You blinked out. Say that last thing again, Dr. Kim.
For the emotions, it's any negative emotion I've ever had and confusion. And that's what Dr. Michael Wright talks about when he's talking about the symptoms of healing or the healing crisis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Am I sure about what?
I wondered if you had flipped those two last ones. I thought confusion was part of the mental thing and then emotional was depression. It doesn't matter.
It probably is. You're probably right. I probably misspoke. But they're there, right? They're potentially
right.
Unpleasant experiences I have, even though I'm doing all the right things. And I recently hit a new level of vitality, and then all of a sudden I have more of the negative up in my face or my experience.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and that, you know, Michael Rice has a very, I would say it's kind of a purist perspective on this. So he says everything is energy and everything is going to just realign as soon as you realign your energy. And, you know, from gray hair or white hair going to black and bones healing and knitting together. And all, he's in his various talks, you might have heard him talk about that in that 2-hour lecture recently. He's been talking this way for a lot of years, right? And so from that perspective, he's a purist about how everything that is a negative physical, mental, or emotional experience that occurs when you're doing more of the right things is just a healing crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that in various talks from Dr. Rice and other really good spiritual teachers over the years about the healing crisis business is that one of the most important factors in how much of it I'm going to experience and how painful it's going to be and how long it's going to take, one of the most important factors in that is my willingness. So if I get tight or tense and I'm, you know, spinning around with a headache and stomach cramps and I'm just angry that this is happening to me and I want it to go away and I run for the ibuprofen or the Tylenol or whatever, then I have resistance to the process.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
so it's going to be a lot more uncomfortable for me than if I soften and breathe and take time to rest and maybe soak in a tub or, you know, do yoga and breath work and more worksheets and take a day or two off work and let the process flow without my resistance to it. And that's a
mm-hmm.
huge component or a huge
yeah.
factor in how much I'm going to feel of the negativity that would be involved in this process that Michael Rice would call a healing crisis.
Well, it seems like it all makes sense, but I think I've been in one for the last couple of days, and it's extremely messy as far as really knowing what's going on and not being able to see beyond it very well and really resorting to, you know, like looking at a doorknob just to reassure myself that I'm here and this is right now and everything's okay right now and breathing and doing very basic things, not even knowing what's going on. But I was very reassured by the fact that Jeannie went through some incredible... Are you taking off, Tim? Okay, bye. See you later. Good luck. Jeannie mentioned that after she had been... Are we at the end of the hour? Let me look. Yeah, we're practically there. Well, this is probably a good way to tie right over into Michael because Jeannie went through a day of intense depression. And that has been such a help to me to remember that she had said that about her own process because I'm going through the same thing. And her having done it so recently is just reassuring, that's all. But nothing seems to have sharp edges around here. Anyway, thanks for talking about these things.
Well, you're welcome and deserving. Thank you. And Jeannie just popped on the switchboard, so she doesn't know that you were talking about how reassuring it was for you when you heard her talking about her time of depression and in the healing crisis. So I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will hopefully welcome Jeannie Rice and turn on her microphone.
Thank you for doing that. My computer was running a little slow there getting it on. Thank you.
All right. Blessings. Have a great show.
Thanks. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, April the 27th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael just a minute to get dialed in. And I will, okay, I think I finally got it all turned on. Computer's running a little bit slow. We did get the link. Yesterday we talked about a class that Michael had taught several years ago in Florida for the Course in Miracles class. And Doug Bingley actually converted them all from, they were cassette tapes, and he converted them into digital. And so we shared the link to one of them in the notes for yesterday's show. And that link will be active for 2 weeks. And then all 48 of the tapes, they're 2 hours each, will be available online in our MP4 catalog for streaming. But for right now, you can listen to that one and enjoy it, and you can see what the others, kind of what the others are about. And what we're going to do is if you buy individually, they're $7 a piece. If you get the full set of 48, they're $5 a piece, so that's $240. And if you buy the full set within the next 2 weeks before this link is deactivated, then we will offer the special price of $200 for all 48 tapes. And I'm having a little challenge with my computer. My memory on my computer is about full, and so it runs a little slow. It took me about 5 hours to get that one in the position where I could put it up on Vimeo and then make that link available. So I hope everybody avails themselves to that and listens to it. It's real funny. We were talking yesterday. Michael and I were listening to it a couple nights ago, and Michael just kept going, "Wow, that's so good, man." You know, and I thought he disliked the speaker. I didn't recognize his voice because it was back in the 80s, and his voice was higher. And then the next day, we were listening to the rest of it, and he made some kind of a statement. I don't even remember what it is, but it was something that, like a term that he uses all the time. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that was Michael. So I didn't even recognize him listening to it, but it's an awesome tape. And some of the information I told him, I said, I've never heard you use that. So it's really good. So I hope that you all will click on that link and listen to it. And then as soon as I get the rest of them up, you'll be able to access them on our page that says MP4s. And welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Yeah, you will, as you listen to those 48 tapes, sweetie, you'll hear a lot of things that you don't hear me talk about now. They were all part of the developmental phase of this work, and that goes back. I think the first of those tapes was probably done about 39 years ago, the first in that series. So, and they went, they span a time from probably 39 years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. So about almost 100 hours of conversation. So a lot of the pieces of the puzzle were falling in place back then as we worked with these tools. And so I'm going to turn to the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And we'll just do a little reading from there. We're talking to Richard about ancient wisdom and the file folder effect in the mind, and how when you clear out of the mind hostilities and fears related to specific events, i.e., in this case, parents, then you can start to see parents more clearly rather than projecting unresolved pain or trauma into your brain's image of them. If you're in pain or trauma about anything, You can stop the conversation about how they did it to you, and you can recognize that you're in pain and trauma around whatever the perceptual construct is about. You can rest assured that there's pain and trauma inside of you. If you project it into your brain's image of them, of course, you'll talk about how they're hurting you. They're causing you pain and trauma. But the pain and trauma, if you're feeling it, always, always, always comes from within. It's never, I mean, aside from somebody punching you in the nose, it's never inflicted from without. So when somebody says, you hurt me, actually receiving a punch or whatever, the mind is telling a lie. The mind is projecting its unresolved pain-based content into its brain's image of that individual. And, of course, we believe the lie because when the mind creates the picture, we see it happening, just like we said. And our words have directed the mind to structure things, just like we said. And so we're looking to unwind that, understand it, and remove pain-based content so that love stays present in the mind, whatever's happening in the world. You can do that. And as you do that, and of course, you, in order to do that, you only have to face everything in your past that you've never resolved around pain, including your genetic content. So it's a task. We're not suggesting it's a walk in the park. You know, we never promised you a rose garden. We promised you a healing crisis. And we promised it would not be Dr. Feelgood, and it won't. And as you go forward, it's not going to be Dr. Feelgood. We're not here for that. You can go get your pills from somebody if you want Dr. Feelgood, but we're not interested in that. What we're interested in doing is presenting real teachings in real time that give people real opportunities to work through their unresolved hostility, fear, and pain-based content and live incarnated in their bodies as the presence of love. Now, the same events can be going on, but we'll no longer fantasize that those events are the cause of the pain we're experiencing. We'll recognize the pain comes from within, and when pain comes up, we'll choose to forgive that pain. We'll choose to remove it and be finished with it. So that's where we want to go with this whole project. And so for those who are following along in the book, we're on page 58 in the section on ancient wisdom. And we've been talking to Richard, and actually I'm going to read the bold print in the paragraph that we finished off with yesterday. Holding your breath is exactly how you acquire a past about something and carry it with you. Holding your breath attaches the pain of an experience to a reality in the mind. If that reality is triggered, even though external circumstances do not justify it, there will be pain. And until you access that pain and remove it, it's going to look like all those things because it happens over and over and over and over. You watch people all over the place. They're all doing it. So everybody believes the lie the mind says is, you hurt me. And it's time to recognize the truth of the way this whole system works. So I asked Richard the question, Richard, has it occurred to you that just because someone could not live up to a teaching, and he's been talking about how his parents and the people in his church were hypocrites, the teaching does not mean that the teaching has no value or that the problem lies within the teaching. It sounds like one of the issues was your parents' inability to live up to their ideals. That does not make them good or bad. It simply means that they, like all humans, we're not perfect. It seems you attach the imperfection and abuse of your parents to their religion. Projecting your pain onto religion makes it difficult for you to see any benefit in it. I've seen many who simultaneously abandon their relationship with their parents and their spiritual support systems in this fashion. You know something? I just realized that I jumped ahead. Or pardon me, I fell behind. And maybe we need to hear this piece again. So I'm going to go ahead and finish it up to, we actually were on the next page, but let's go forward anyway. I guess my parents deserve the right to be human too. Perhaps I expected too much of them, he pondered. I can see that they were trying and doing the best they could, and I feel relieved just knowing that. That insight is a result of forgiveness. It's a small but significant example of how forgiveness works, I said. What do you mean? Well, you had a reality, a file, so to speak, called My Parent or Parents Should Have Been Perfect. According to your perception, they were. And you attached the pain, abuse, and resentment you experienced with them to your mind's file on parents. Whenever the reality parent was triggered in you, your perception of them or yourself as a parent was clouded by that complex of thoughts and feelings in that file. In Aramaic, forgive means to cancel. The minute you loosen your grip on your need for them to be perfect, in effect, you cancel your need for that perfection. The result of that action is your parent, quote-unquote, file open, and the abuse, pain, and resentment that it contained began to release. This is true forgiveness in Aramaic. Certainly a radically different action than letting them off the hook, as the Greeks would tell you. As the cloud over your perception of them lifted, a painful reality was in process of being forgiven, and you can now see them more realistically. I'm not sure I heard everything you said, but I sure feel relieved, Richard said. You are not the only one who will experience relief, Richard. This release will impact not only your mother and father, but due to the new clarity in your parent file, your capacity to parent will also be enhanced. And so whenever we move clouds from the mind, the perceptual guidance that comes from the mind in that arena, you know, whatever arena it happens to be, in this case for Richard, it's parents, his ability to parent will be unclouded, and he'll find himself more capable of parenting. And, you know, that applies in any arena in one's life. As you clean up your mind is more capable of supporting you in that particular arena. And, of course, the idea here is to get to the point where we've each taken sufficient responsibility to clean up everything in our bloodline that's based in any form of hostility or fear, so that there's nothing in carbon-based memory to distract us from the truth of who we are. Your original essence, your created essence, your true being is that of love. That's all. And when something less than love displaces your experience of that, it's your work to clean it up. Now, if somebody is simultaneously present when that opportunity for you comes up, the normal functioning in the culture, what's become the norm, certainly not natural, but what's become the norm is to hook up that pain to our brain's image of them and talk about how they are hurting you. But again, aside from something like a punch in the nose, cancel the thought, all pain, all hurt, all sadness, all grief, all rage is internal and removable. And it doesn't matter what the event is in the world. And people say, well, Michael, what if someone dies? Well, I could tell you stories of people I've worked with who resolved issues around death. And when they had in this case, the one case I'm thinking of at this moment, had a parent die, it was one of the most powerful and sweetest family experiences of that person's life. And because in this particular case, this woman who was in her 60s at the time addressed the issue of death with her parents, her father's impending demise in his 90s, she heard the words from her father before he did leave. For the first time in her life, this woman's in her early 60s. And because she addressed and brought this up within the family system with mom and dad, she heard for the first time in her life the words from her father, I love you. And his passing was a powerful and sweet family experience. Now, does that mean there was no sense of loss? No. If loss comes up, then that's the next thing to be forgiven. You know, the only reason there's ever trauma around the death of a person, because in the file in one's mind about that person, there is trauma. Otherwise, trauma is non-existent there. And so as we clean that up, all the things that we thought were the cause of our traumas disappear, because our traumas disappear. And you get to experience life as it actually is. And it's a whole lot different than what the norm of perceptual constructs is in our culture. And so I hope that that makes some sense and opens the space as we move to the next level of our conversation about forgiveness and recognizing that forgiveness is a tool with which I go inside myself and remove the root of my pain and my trauma. Literally forgiving the trauma, not forgiving the person we've attached it to. So stop this conversation about I forgive you. Stop this conversation about I forgive myself. Never forgive anybody ever again. But if you're in trauma, pain, or disease, choose to go inside, take responsibility, and remove those dis-ease energies. And as you remove those dis-ease energies, guess what happens? Dis-ease disappears. Now, you know, it can be a challenge because many people, oh, they hear about this possibility and they go, yeah, boy, that sounds good to me, man, I want to do it. But then they shy away from it because, it's not Dr. Feelgood. And they're like, well, you know, I really don't want to do that today. And their traumas accumulate so deeply that when they're up against the wall, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm willing now. But their vitality's been so zapped by the accumulated traumas they've been unwilling to face and that they're blaming everybody else for. You know, if I blame my spouse because I'm in pain over something they said, and what they said might have been nasty and terrible, but I'm not in pain over their nasty and terrible. I'm in pain over what's going on inside of me. But if I refuse to face that, and people tend to run away from that, the energy level carrying that burden oftentimes leads to such deterioration that the turnaround is more of a challenge. So do it today. Never, how's that going? Never put off till tomorrow what you can do today. Take on your work and unload. The more vital you are, the more quickly your healing process will go. And so we're honored and delighted to be part of this conversation with you. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Give me just
Let's
a minute.
Let's see. Oh, there we are. We've got a nurse here doing some work with Dad, and so Jeannie's, I'm sure, dividing her attention and giving the nurse some answers. Yes. Dad's doing fine, just getting some support for him. Go ahead, sweetie.
Okay, let me flip back over and see. Yeah, she was asking him questions, and he wasn't able to answer them. But
sure.
Nobody has a hand up. See Susan's hands up, but I think that was left over from Dr. Tim. Oop, her hand just went down. So up and back up again. So I guess
she
does want
to
talk.
Get to talk to Susan. Hooray. Awesome.
Hello, Miss Susan.
Hey, you should tell everybody, if you want to get back on, tap that number one several times. Yeah. Jeannie.
Welcome.
Thank you, Michael. I wanted to say to Jeannie that she helped me unwittingly this weekend because of the depression you had experienced for a day, and then you remembered that you had been on an antidepressant for a year. Well, you know, Friday and then over the weekend I did a lot of processing thanks to Dr. Tim and Michael on Friday, and it has been a really un-Dr. Feelgood period of time. Yesterday, it was very hard. And Jeannie, I don't know, but I thought maybe I was experiencing something similar to what you did. I couldn't put words to it. I didn't know where to put my mind. I had no energy. I knew I was in some sort of a weird thing. It seemed very amorphous. And I just thought, well, Jeannie did this.
Yeah, it sounds like that. You described it perfect. I mean, because, you know, Michael kept saying, is there something you need to process, something you want to talk about? And it's like, no, I just think I'm just tired. But it was like there was a dark cloak. And
yeah.
So, yeah, totally. Hold on a second. Okay, the nurse just left. This week's going to be really busy because the nurse come, the occupational therapist, the physical therapist. It's like he's all of them coming
time.
In to assessing. Yeah.
Wow.
And then they'll determine where they need to go and what they need to do. But yeah, on that depression, it's exactly, you know, it was just like it. And I don't even know at what point during the day it's just like it creeped up over me. Like,
mm-hmm.
And it's like a dark slump.
From the outside, it was obvious it was creeping up over you. That's why so many times I said, what's up, honey? What's happening? What's moving? And it was so subtle, you know, that it wasn't really distinguishable. And, you know, as you breathed and allowed it to move. And remember that depression is nothing but a series of active thought disorders that suck the energy. It's like it sucks the life out of us. And when piece by piece by piece, you can address, remember we've talked about the objective of this work is to support people in developing the skill. Remember the opening words of the book of John, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. That's what the Greeks tell us. In Aramaic, it's in the beginning was the mind energy. I think a thought, the cell biologist now tells me, that thought becomes a neuropeptide. That neuropeptide becomes, or moves around within my structure, literally, and it finds a receptor site in a cell, lands, and inserts itself as chemistry in the cell. Now we say we have the chemical basis of depression. No, we have mind energy that doesn't belong. The skill we're inviting people to develop, and it takes time to develop like any other skill, is to literally pull those neuropeptides out, take a look at them, and throw them away. Literally throwing away or forgiving depression. And oftentimes, because, you know, sometimes we've gotten into thought disorders when we were in altered states, you know, maybe after the fifth scotch or something, and weren't even aware that it went in. So it can be a challenge to become conscious of exactly what's moving. It's a practice. And you literally, you know, I have a visual where I see if I notice some kind of funk going on in my energy field, I have a visual where I see myself reaching into the cell, being guided, literally taking that neuropeptide that looks like chemistry in the cell, pulling it back out to its neuropeptide state, decoding it, looking at it and going, oh, that's what that is. And then changing its energy, bringing it forward in the presence of love and replacing it. And so it's a process. But that's all depression is. And some people, I mean, their depressions are heavy and totally debilitating because for years, for generations, thought disorders have been accumulated and never faced and never dealt with. It's a challenge. It's a skill.
Michael,
so
I heard
like
everything you said.
This weekend.
But,
mm-hmm.
I heard everything you said, but your voice almost goes beyond hearing, and there's a lot of static.
Okay, I'll get my mic. Is that better?
Oh, yeah, a lot better. Thanks.
Okay, my apology. Thanks for the reminder. I'll keep my microphone right in front of my face.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, that's it was just very helpful to have Jeannie, and it's lifting now, but it took longer. But I had to say to myself, well, Jeannie was on an antidepressant for a year. I was on for 10 years, so maybe I need 2 days of being depressed. Yeah.
And there may be many layers of that healing process to come.
Yeah, maybe.
So that's where the willingness comes in. You know, I'm willing to allow this to just be there. Did you touch into any specific thoughts?
Tons.
Thought disorders?
I did two worksheets, the way you said, being my mother. And you had told me before to write a letter from my mother to me, and I did that. It came a little too easily. It just wasn't the right vehicle, I guess, or I didn't really apply right. These worksheets were much more productive. And, in fact, one byproduct was I wondered if you might consider adding to your pseudo-solutions hurrying. It's a kind of avoiding in the present, and maybe it doesn't fit, but I certainly
if I could just
it.
Get this over with.
Or just having to do everything fast. It isn't that this is so bad. It's just that whatever I do, I have to do it fast. And I've been watching how Tim Bingham and I, we've been going for these long walks. And I've told you before, he's the tortoise and I'm the hare. And so I have developed ways of coping with this without having to slow down. What I do is sort of run around him in little circles. We can keep up our discussion, but I'm jogging around him until I get to the point where I can be as slow as he is. And he is making efforts to speed up too. So there's a good thing going on here, but it still just totally amazes me how slowly he can walk. My idea is that he will never get there. And that, too, needs looking at because he gets where he needs to go. What is this? You know, but anyway, there have been many realizations. And also, I had to, when I came to 5B, I would put God, Ruka, whatever. My mother was not in any way religious. She made fun of religion a lot and had a lot of funny things to say about nuns who go in pairs because they have to keep an eye on each other and all this business. So being my mother, I realized all I could say is I invite my healthier mind or my better self to incline me toward healing. And that seemed to suffice. But in the enlightened goal, mostly it was do another worksheet, keep looking. So I don't have all that much to say about it yet. It's very much, I'm looking forward to still point breathing because of this, because this is one where it's way beyond my mental capacity to understand and way early stuff. It feels so early that maybe the still point breathing will be good for that.
Well, and that tool is specifically designed for the things that are, well, not only that, but it energetically tends to handle the things that are pre-verbal and that I really can't quite put into my conceptual framework. So it's stepping into that energetic process and cranking the energy up sufficiently, you know, all the times that we held the breath and restricted the flow to crank the energy flow back up and just flush the system out. So that's perfect. We'll be doing that in the intensive on Wednesday night.
Good. And I had one unrelated question. I had an aunt, it was actually an aunt of Tim's, who was an alcoholic. And she had 11 children, and two of them were mentally ill, and she didn't acknowledge that. She said, oh, they're fine. And in the Course in Miracles sense, yes, they were. They were perfectly themselves and all this business. She used to drink, but then she was an ecstatic person. And when we visit her, all she could say is, isn't it wonderful? And isn't this beautiful? And she was very loving, but she would walk to the town Four Corners in Salem, Connecticut, which was maybe a mile. And she didn't have much money, and she would spend whatever it cost for one of those little tiny bottles of whiskey or whatever. And she would just she would drink it, and then she'd walk down there again. And this was her activity, is to get somehow find enough coins in the house to get another one. And so she was in a state all the time. I just wanted to tell you about her and hear your take on that.
Well, my take would be is that if I'm not able to cope with and deal with my pain, and I can anesthetize myself and live in a pretense, then it looks like I don't have to deal with anything. And so there's a difference to me in the Course in Miracles thinking of saying, oh, so this is perfect where it is, and the false belief that anything is perfect. You know, when I'm in the mindset of forgiveness, I see someone who's mentally challenged. I can hold the space for their perfection. I can hold the space of active love rather than a judgment. But someone who's, you know, tippling back a fifth every time they turn around and saying how wonderful life is just defrauding themselves and everybody around them, would be my offering. I don't believe for a minute when you say she was a happy person that she was happy at all. She wouldn't be out, you know, using such a powerful anesthetic as alcohol if she were in fact a happy person. But it sounds like she was functional and put on a good show.
Yeah. She spent her days, after the kids were adults, she spent her days looking, sitting in a bedroom window, looking out the window and keeping herself inebriated and letting the house go to, I mean, it was a wreck, a total wreck.
Yeah.
Her kids would take care of it. So there was something really going on there. But on the other hand, she would be so effusive that I felt I couldn't match that, even in my most happy state. There's no way I could be that way. Anyway, it was just a strange situation.
It sounds like she was a good actress.
Yeah, maybe.
So I join you in holding her in a blessing.
She's long gone, and, but still holding her in a blessing.
Yeah, still holding her in a blessing, yeah. The reason she's on your mind may be that she's ready to do some healing and is looking for support.
Well, she had a lot of kids, and so did my mother, and so I thought of her because my mother, you know, she was so bright and wanted so much to have a job or to write or to maybe be a professor. She had huge talents, and she got married and had 3 children and then 2 more by accident, which was my little sister and me. And it was just too much for her. She was very lonely and frustrated and all that stuff. So, you know, imagine this Aunt Rose. She had 11 children.
Yeah.
So
when you think about the power person dynamic and what you went through this weekend, and you realize that there were probably times with Mom where, one, she had the power, more power for your life than you did. 2, was not connected to love. And 3, you likely perceived it as survival. And if she was carrying that energy of depression and not feeling fulfilled, as a child, you would just open your field and, like a sponge, just suck all that in. Literally, energetically. And then under stress, the tendency would be to re-radiate that energy. Instead, what we're suggesting is you open, you let yourself breathe into that energy, be with it, and process it out. And that sounds like exactly what you're doing.
Well, you have just put some order to it that I hadn't. I've just been feeling a lot of stuff and doing those 2. I've only done 2 worksheets with her because I went back to the power person thing because that seems so relevant too. And there was a lot of material there. I've done maybe two or maybe three sets of that PowerPerson worksheet. As they came out, I would do it, and then you'd change them, and I'd do it, and so forth. So I might make a compilation.
Awesome.
Of all the answers, you know, from all of them. But how's it coming, by the way? Are you going to generate another
process.
One for us?
I'm working on it. Version 5 is underway.
Wow.
With your support, I'm integrating some of the changes you suggested, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm honored and delighted, to use the phrase of somebody
I
know.
Me too.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, thanks. And thank Jeannie, because it was nice to just sort of stand on that memory of what she had been saying. So I thought, maybe this isn't the end of the world. Jeannie went through it. Yep, hang on, you know.
You are a super strong woman, Susan, and I admire you. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeannie.
You make me think of the story.
Like derangement. It just like being
it is.
Nuts.
Yep.
And, you know, we have to watch because I use the story of the disciples in the boat and there was a storm and they saw Jesus walking on water and Peter said, I know if you ask me to step out, I can walk on water. The storm did not change, but as long as he kept his focus, he walked on water. We all have storms going on around us of different natures. And if we stay focused, we move through them, but it's really easy, and I say this from experience, to look at the circumstances, look at the, you know, the dark cloud and the depression and the, oh my gosh, and to fall back into it. And then if, you know, we're not careful, which, you know, I'm so thankful that I have Michael here to remind me, but, you know, it would be so easy to call the doctor and say, you know, I'm just so depressed with everything that's going on. I need something. And, you know, but the medication numbs us to what's going on, but it doesn't heal it in any way. I mean, when I came off of the antidepressants, you know, my problems were still there and nothing had changed. And so, you know, just keep on and stick to it and stay focused on where you're going and don't look at the circumstances. It doesn't mean
I'm
they're not real and
that
it's not there, but just don't get absorbed into it.
That's good you say that because I have my Charlie grandson. We went for a walk. Tim, Jonathan, and two of the grand boys went for a walk, and Charlie didn't want to go. He said, I want to be left alone, and I know what he does. He has this OCD thought disorder process that he goes through, and he's so miserable that he doesn't want to do anything except just close his eyes and let it kind of maul him from inside his mind. So I couldn't convince him to come out, but his dad went in and said, Charles, you're coming. Whether you want to or not, no matter how badly you feel, you're coming with us. So I'm walking down the hill with Charlie, and I said, Charlie, I've had a rough day myself. I know a little bit about what it's like. He said, I always appreciate your sympathy, but I don't want any right now. I said, okay. So we didn't even talk. And then they started playing Frisbee, and then Charlie ran up the hill with his brother, and I thought, oh, you know, physically to get things moving is probably helping. And then his dad said, you're a little better, aren't you? And he says, yeah, a little better. He goes into it. And so, of course, Jeannie, just what you said, don't look at the circumstances, because circumstances were very sad yesterday, and my son was saying, I'm so worried about him. And I'm saying, and I'm worried about you and him. You know, and you can just go there. So, yeah.
So the question to ask yourself is, if I'm concerned about them, how can I best serve them? By going there?
No.
Or doing my own work and standing as a space of active present love, able to give input that's truly based in love.
Right. And I had no idea yesterday what that might be because I was in such a shape. But I always look at him and just love him. And I wasn't saying anything anymore, just walking with him. But part of me doesn't think that's nearly enough, you know. So I know that's the best thing in the world, but it isn't enough.
Well, my offering would be, it's a whole lot better than being in pain and trauma and worry about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing that too.
And if,
I know.
If the wisdom is going to come through you at the moment when he's ready for a hand up, be ready for it, and it's going to come from your mind when it's connected to love, not your mind when it's connected to its own thought disorders. And there's a good chance that he might be working through some of the thought disorders that were passed along genetically by you.
Oh, yeah.
And as you resolve those, you open the energy window. And you'll know the right thing to say and the right thing to do.
Well, Michael, can I read you what I wrote to him this morning? You know, I get up
Please
very
do.
Early and I do my work. And he popped to mind, and I invoked Michael Rice. I invoked Jeannie Rice. I invoked Tim Hayes. I wrote this letter, but I was very aware that I was in fix-it mode and rescue mode and all the other stuff. So I was smelling a large rat even while I was writing this. But here goes. I said, "Hi, Tools. I have a few ideas that might help with your struggle with the Gutgold business. Mr. Gutgold is his professor that he obsesses about. First, this is not something you can figure out. Where have you ever heard that before, Michael? Yeah. And using willpower to stop negative thoughts does not work either. In fact, it can make you feel worse and make things worse. Now, I just caught the denial in that it can make you, but I said it anyway, so I'll continue. Instead, soften. Allow whatever thoughts come to you to come through. Accept them, but immediately ask to be shown how to go from there. Who are you asking? You are asking God. Ask even though you don't know who or what God is, and ask even if you don't believe in God. I don't think God cares at all, whether we believe or not. But I promise you that someone, capital S, something capital S, hears. Keep allowing and breathing and asking. Things like walking and noticing what's immediately around you can be helpful when you feel really rotten or stuck. Above all, do not be critical of yourself for feeling and doing as you have been feeling and doing. This is the beginning of loving yourself. Once you start doing this regularly, your times of feeling badly will shorten and shorten and shorten. Again, if you are having a particularly bad stretch, do not fight it. Be kind to yourself. Do little things you like. Above all, accept yourself as you are and trust that help is always available. One of the things I really appreciate about you is that you tell us when you are feeling badly. I used to hide my feelings. I was terribly ashamed of them. The result is that it took longer to get better. Sharing and asking for support shortens the bad patches. Love, Orb.
Nice.
So you can tell that's all Michael Rice, Jeannie Rice, Tim Hayes, rearranged in a letter to my grandson.
That's awesome. The one place that I would put in an interrupt would be where you tell him what not to do in terms of feeling bad about or condemning himself, whatever the exact words were, and perhaps give him a bridge to cross with that is if you're in self-condemnation or feeling bad because of, you know, judging yourself, whatever it is, there's a solution for that, and that is that you can cancel the need to feel good and let yourself process out those old thoughts of, you know, there's something wrong with me, those thought disorders.
So I got it all up to the point. Cancel the need to feel good, and then say again. I'm writing this down.
Yeah. And then be with what surfaces. And remember that, and the other thought I would offer is when in the conversation with God, rather than leaving it nebulous, is, you know, you have experienced love, right? And so let's let go of the word God and know that love is real. because that's what God is. That is the energy field in which we live, move, and have our being. And it's always available if we choose to turn to it. We don't have to. We can stick with our thought disorders and the feelings they create, but it's that presence of love is always there.
Well, Michael, I should have sent the letter for editing to you first. Those are good things. Ah, thanks.
Okay, cool. I'll have a look at it. I'll give you some feedback.
Well, you just did. I mean, I wish I had sent it to you this morning. Yeah, I've got it. I've got it. I scribbled it down.
Okay. And you're still welcome to go ahead and send it to me if you'd like.
Okay. Thank you.
Cool. Cool. Awesome. Well, it sounds like you got through a nice layer this weekend. That's fabulous. And, you know, that line from the Course that says, when we're healed, we're never healed alone. So, Jeannie, thank you for opening the energy window, for being willing to walk through that layer that you went through this weekend. It's pretty profound.
I wonder how many other people felt they had permission to go through that kind of a healing crisis, which resembles the illness so closely. Yeah.
It's powerful. Profound. All right. Well, anything else on your mind for today?
Nope, not at the moment.
Well, we'll be surrounding you and Charlie and Papaw with love.
Okay. Thank you so much. Particularly
right.
Charlie. He's struggling. Thank you.
All right. We cherish you.
Thanks.
All right. Blessings. All right. Well, Miss Jeannie, we're down to about, I think, 13 minutes or so. Do we have anybody else out there with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet here. So if someone presses 1, you're first in line without waiting. There was...
So if you're out there and...
It wasn't,
oh, go ahead, sweetie.
Go ahead. It wasn't a question from someone, however... there's probably a lot of people that fall into this category. I had received an email from a young lady that I've known for several years, and it's like she's hit rock bottom, and it's like I'm all alone, and, you know, nobody's helping me. I don't have support and all this, and it's like you do have support, and, you know, we are on the radio show for 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, and that's free support, so why don't you call? And then also, you know, that reminded her how much help she has received over the years. And, you know, you've got a intensive partner. She's part of the intensive. Have you contacted her and ask your partner for support and accountability? You know, you can go out to the Facebook codependence page and put your question out there and ask for support. And, you know, probably all 40-some people that have been in the last two intensives would offer you support. You're not alone. However, notice how when you never come back to the work until you hit bottom. And then when things get good again, then you let it go. And then when you hit rock bottom again, then you come back to the work. And so the consistency, even when things are good, you know, you can do worksheets on good things. You know, when you think, Billy Joe makes me so happy. Well, that you think that's a good thought, but if you think that somebody outside of you makes you happy, it's the same error in thought as if you think something outside of you makes you mad or afraid or whatever. And so to recognize that even in the high moments, the good times, that we have to continue to do our work, and that's all of us. You know, I mean, Michael and I do our work all the time, and, I mean, he teaches it. You know, I teach it. But if we let it go, then, you know, and that's one thing that's really good about being able to do the Zoom meetings and this radio show and everything, is because it keeps us doing our work as well. And I'm sure there's more people out there than her. So she's not alone.
Yeah. Well, you know, if a thought disorder comes up,
that I don't deserve support or I'm not supportable, then we tend to isolate from our support. It's just, you know, without those unconscious thoughts, direct behavior. And it's just time for us to clean that up, to change that, to shift that in another direction. So here we are working up, waking up, moving forward. And if you haven't engaged in the forgiveness processes yet, go to our website, whyagain.org. In the upper left-hand corner, you'll see a link that says Start Here. Click that link, and there are dozens of hours of instruction. And, you know, sad to say that one of the things that oftentimes runs non-human lives, and I mean those who are not fueled by love, is just laziness and just giving up. And I think that oftentimes what has happened is people have tried everything they could imagine and nothing worked, so they believe that having tried everything, nothing works. Our offering is, if you'll take these tools and use them consistently and persistently, it works. That's all. We actually have double your pain back guarantee. We'll give it all back to you if you want. But if you choose to really key in and consistently, persistently, that doesn't mean I do it one day or another and then I quit, but I consistently, persistently do it, then I get to work through those things. It's not easy. It's not Dr. Feelgood. All the support you can imagine right here. So go to the website. You can do the worksheet on the website. You can download the worksheet and print it, so you can do them at home in writing. You can go to any one of 20-plus radio shows that are on the site, on the special shows, that will where either Dr. Tim or myself or Jeannie has walked somebody through a worksheet step by step. So there are full instructions, over 20 sets of them. And, of course, each one has a different wrinkle, so there's a different piece of learning with each one of them. Listen to all 20 of them if you have some confusion about the worksheet process. And, or, of course, we're here to answer questions. And the next thing you can do is you can go to your app store on your phone, type in the words in your app store, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, Forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. You can do the forgiveness work right there on your phone. And we're here to support you 5 days a week. Stay engaged in the conversation. One of the reasons for this show is because, you know, it's not easy to find a conversation like this out in the world. You know, you're not going to go to your local bridge club or your most likely your local church or, you know, your local rec center or your local bar. You're not going to find a conversation like this. The reason we do this the way we're doing it is so that anybody and everyone on the planet who wants to stay engaged can stay engaged in the conversation and be supported in moving forward. And so we are here 100% to assist and support. And if you're on one of those stations where you can't see, where we can't see you, pardon me, in our control panel, that means you can't push one and ask a question. So in order to be able to do that, dial into the show, and the call-in number is 563-999-3581, 563-999-3581. Call into the show, and you'll be listening. When you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then, if you have a question, push one. That will raise a hand in the control panel, and we'll be having a live conversation. And our deepest desire is to have that conversation with you and to help you to sort through, sort out, forgive, remove thought disorders that perhaps keep you in pain or trauma or inaction about what's going on in your life. So we're here 100% for support. And so if you're out there in listener land, we've got about 6 minutes left, so we've got time for a short conversation, a question that someone might have. So if you would, push one
and ask your question. Let's have a conversation. What's going on in your world? How can we support you? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581. And all is quiet, Jeannie?
It is.
Well, let's talk about this thing of... go ahead.
I was just going to say, we actually count in the outro only have about 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, let's take 3 minutes and talk about this idea of incarnation. And we brought it up briefly yesterday. And, you know, if you stop and do something we instruct you to do often, and that is go back to the moment where you first held a newborn child. And if you haven't ever held a newborn, go find one to hold. You know, if you're in a city, there are hospitals that would love to have you there to just be with and hold a newborn. So tap into the essence of that newborn and notice that the essence of the newborn is the presence of love. We all came into this world exactly the same way as that presence. And if we came into a genetic bloodline that had all kinds of hostility and fear and rage and guilt and grief and, you know, drug abuse and alcohol abuse and spousal abuse and sexual abuse and verbal abuse and emotional abuse, then over time, as carbon-based memory, as that memory system is stored in physiology, comes online, it becomes too traumatic to stay in your body. And one of the objectives of this work is to remove that trauma so that the natural thing is for you to, you love being you. I'm talking to the being that you are, to be, to enter into your form and experience your physiology fully. And when you do that, you will notice a new level of energy entering into your form. You will physically feel it as love enters in deeper and deeper ways, in deeper levels into your physiology. And it's when you're fully present in your physiology that life begins. Until then, Yeshua, you know, when he talked about people who weren't there, he said, you know, one guy says to him, you know, before I go follow you, I got to go bury my father. It was a tradition that you stuck around to bury your parents. And Yeshua said, let the dead bury the dead. It's like, yes, his father was alive, but he was already dead. And he said, you know, if you're going to step in and really truly do life, then you need to change the dynamic. You need to change the game. And in so doing, you incarnate in this form. And we're here to support each and every being on the earth. And I mean every being, you know, from the lowest of the low people who we would say that they're, you know, down in the deepest dumps of the dregs of humanity. They're no different than you and I. No different. The truth about them is the same that's true about you and I. And when we choose to incarnate as that, everything changes. And we're here to support that change. And we're told that you're ready to have the best year yet of your eternal life and recognize that it's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.